There's a guy named Baba Shiv. Baba Shiv, that's a fun name. Baba Shiv does a lot of work on the intersection of neuroscience and decision making. His work has attempted to show the neurological processes involved with coming to decisions. And some of you right now, you know that you are excellent at making decisions, and others of you know that you have the toughest time in the world making decisions. It's not about strength of character or weakness of character. It's about some patterns of understanding and learning. But the reality is, whether you're good at making decisions or bad at making decisions, whether you make good decisions or bad decisions, some of us never get as far as making the decision. Others of us never get past making bad decisions, right? In any case, decisions require action. It's one thing to make a decision, to decide a right course of action, but if you never take the course, if you never step forward, then your decision doesn't really matter, does it? Because decisions are meant to be acted upon. And what Baba Shiv says about this is that we have to envision how we'll feel on the other end of the decision. And so, some of us, this is why we don't decide. This is why we don't act. Because we know that the moment we make a decision, we have committed ourselves to a course of pain. You ever had a decision? These are called the hard decisions. You know that the moment you've decided, the moment you've committed, the moment that you take action, you're going to have to endure some pain, some discomfort, some awkward feeling. Parents, this is the thing you feel every time you're in a run out with your teenager. You're having to make a decision, and you know that they're going to dislike it. Parents, this is you in the aisle when you're rolling down the aisle with your two-year-old and you mistakenly turn into the cereal aisle. You know why those boxes are colorful, don't you? And you have to make this decision. When you turn into the cereal aisle, you have to decide that you're willing, that it's your day to take on this little one who will make their desire known to you and will push you to a decision. Spouse, this is the decision you make when you're confronted with a situation with your spouse, and you know that what you have to say and what needs to happen is going to ignite the TNT in the room. Do you remember the old Yosemite Sam cartoons? Inevitably, Yosemite Sam. Some of you kids don't know who I'm talking about. That's okay. You know, you can look it up. I'll let you look it up. Inevitably, Yosemite Sam was going to find himself in a TNT bunker surrounded by dynamite, and he will have lit a match, which apparently you used to be able to light them off your shoe. So he's inevitably going to light the match, discover where he is when the lights come on, and boom. Like, that's what you feel like when you're having to walk into that decision. You know that you're lighting a match, and it's going to create conflict. Decisions require actions, and today as we take our Bibles and we conclude this kind of sub-narrative within the broader narrative of Exodus, as we conclude our Change of Heart series, having walked from chapter 7 here through to the crossing of the Red Sea, we have Israel. We catch up with them. They have Egypt and Pharaoh on one side, so they have the sword facing them on one side, and they're bookended against the sea on the other. The Red Sea is behind them. The sword of Pharaoh is before them. They're in the trap, the trial of faith, and they have a decision that they've already made, and now they're running out the consequences of their decision. It's not turning out the way they thought it was going to turn out. There's more complications than they expected. You ever made that decision? And you're a week in and you're like, I don't think I like that decision I made a week ago. Was it the wrong thing? And so we catch up with them in Exodus chapter 14, beginning in verse 15. I want to walk through the first portion of these passages down to verse 20, and then we'll stop our reading in one part there. We'll pray, and then we'll move into the rest of our passage. Before we read, however, most of us, I think, often know the right thing that we need to do. We know the confrontations that need to happen. We know the difficult decisions, and we often know the right decision to make. Usually, our head has a lot of the right solutions in it. It's our heart that's having a difficult thing. And some of us, we know in our head that we ought to follow Christ. Most of us don't reject that fact, that to follow Christ faithfully would be a good thing. It's kind of like going on a diet. It would be a good thing. But it comes with consequences, right? If you go on a diet, there are certain consequences you're going to experience, and you're going to have to live with them in a very felt kind of way. And so walking with Jesus, most of us know, we come to church, you're sitting here for a reason. Most of you know in your head that you ought to follow Christ. It's just the carrying it out that's the hard part. We struggle to act on what we know we should do. That's why we make good New Year's resolutions, because we know the kind of changes that we ought to make. But it's just carrying them out a week later, a month later, a year later, that's the problem. We like to pick the new year because it seems like after we sing that song, and then we think afterward, because we went to bed late, that we're going to make good decisions the next morning. That usually doesn't follow. And so we roll in looking for occasions and times in which to solve the heart issue, because most of us don't have a brain issue. Most of us aren't having a hard time knowing what we ought to do. Most of us are having a hard time doing what we ought to do. And so it is here that Pharaoh knows that his heart has been hard and that it has led to disaster. But he has one more disaster to partake in because his heart continues to be hard. You see, Pharaoh in our story doesn't have a problem knowing that God has the power to put the beat down on. Pharaoh has a problem believing that God is who he says he is and that God will accomplish what he says he will accomplish. Israel, it turns out, becomes the new object of our question of whether they truly believe God or not. You see, some of us, we're in church because we're scared to death if we don't show up that something really bad's going to happen to us. Others of us, in the right frame of mind, came to church today because we have faith that God is at work and we want to celebrate and follow him better. It's a very different reason with the same result. You both ended up at church. But I suspect that because you're here today, that you're ready and you're wanting to take this step with me. So today we're going to step up to this heart change challenge. That's what I'm calling it today, the heart change challenge. It's not a mind change challenge, it's a heart change challenge. And so let's read our passage and then we'll roll into this message. Beginning in verse 15, just remembering where we've been in chapter 14, verse 14, Moses had urged them and said, listen, the Lord will fight for you and you have only to be silent. And then in our passage this morning, verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, what do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. Then the angel of God who was going before the host of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Lord, guide us in your word and through this narrative. Help us to see and to take this heart change challenge that we might have soft hearts before you. In Jesus' name, amen. I want us to see something really important in our passage here. Israel is genuinely stuck. They're in the trap. The sword before them, the sea behind them. Okay, you can't miss that reality. The narrative is very explicit about that reality. They are trapped. Moses has said, essentially, I don't know exactly how this is going to work, but you just need to be quiet and let God work it out. You ever been in that situation where you can see no way out? That's Israel, only there's a sword to their throat, and there's a sea behind them. Now, a lot of research has been done on where Israel crossed and all of that, and most of it is inconclusive, and there are a whole lot of articles claiming to have the smoking gun, but it is a difficult challenge to figure out. Nonetheless, it's enough water for, according to this passage, for there to be a wall of water on the right and on the left. In fact, as we read down through this passage, we see that Moses does, in fact, in verse 21, stretch his hand out over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. That's how Israel experienced their crossing. Their crossing on dry ground. Pharaoh and his dudes, however, have a different experience on the same ground, but they have a very different experience, and we need to see this because as Israel crosses, the Egyptians, because of their hardness of heart, rush headlong into the sea. So now they have a wall of water on their right and on their left, but for them, God cast down, it's kind of an interesting framing, he threw down confusion upon them, clogging, verse 25, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. There's a few different explanations as people have attempted to translate what this means, either clogged or they fell off or something happened, but nonetheless it seems that they get stuck in the mud where Israel doesn't get stuck in the mud. Israel's experience is strong east wind. Everybody there experienced the strong east wind, right? But not everybody experienced the dry ground and the easy walking. You see, it seems interesting to me that for some, for those who have been called of God to do his plan, there's a different experience than should be normal for everybody else. And this is the problem that we run into when we choose not to believe in God. So I want to lay out for us just something real quick. Deliverance and judgment are both avenues to faith. I want you to notice what happens. Verse 25, the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Now, I don't know. This is a difficult narrative because if you're Pharaoh, you just went through the Nile water turning to blood, swarms of frogs, swarms of gnats, swarms of flies, swarms of locusts, darkness, unexplained, thick darkness. You went through boils on you, but not on Israel. You went through a plague on all your livestock, but not on Israel's livestock. Like, if you were going to conclude that God was fighting for the Israelites and not for you, it seems like you would have concluded that long before you got yourself in a situation where there's a wall of water on your right and your left. Don't you think so? Maybe there was another few context clues that would have told you, let's get away from these people because God is on their side. Notice and remember what God has said, however. He says, listen, verse 15, there's almost exasperation in the way God says this. He says, why do you cry out to me? In other words, there's an obvious solution, Moses, to your problem. Just go through the sea. That's what you would have concluded, right? You would have thought to yourself, hey, you know, of all the options that we have here, we could either fight it out, a lost cause, a losing battle against the chariots of Israel with our few swords that we have, or we could just go through the sea. I mean, they might as well have just walked across on the water itself, right? At this point, if you're looking for comparative miracles, any of them would have been just as well. And what God says to Moses, he says, listen, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. In fact, it's not just going to be that interesting that you walk through on dry ground, because that's exactly what he says is going to happen. The people of Israel are going to go through this sea that's been parted for them on dry ground. And he said, and the Egyptians will follow you in, and by the time this is done, the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. We get to faith through either deliverance or judgment. Here's part of our decision making. Do you want to get to faith through judgment, or do you want to get to faith through God's deliverance? And I think it runs a little bit like this. You remember when you're a kid and you're worried that there were monsters in your closet? Monsters in your closet is kind of a natural fear for kids. It's not so much that they know what the monsters are. It's just that it's a dark closet, a dark area. They don't know. They feel that fear. The emotion is a reality, but the monsters in the closet is a fiction for them. And so they respond, kids respond, with a fear of that. And no matter how often you go and stand in the closet in the dark with them, and you say, see, there's no monster in this closet. You close the door, you turn off the light, you go out, and then the kid is like afraid again. Because, yes, they trust you so long as you're standing in the closet. I mean, parents are great monster slayers. They figure, what do they know? But at least you're there. I used to be really terrified as a kid of nighttime tornadoes. Somehow daytime tornadoes didn't seem to be as terrifying, but I just didn't want to get caught sleeping when the tornado came. I don't know what the result difference would be between a daytime awake tornado on the house versus a nighttime tornado on the house. I suppose both of them would be just as devastating regardless of whether it's night or day. But there was just something about it being at nighttime. When we come to faith in facing the things we're most afraid of, and when we come to faith in regards to God, I want to remind us of two orientations that we see happening here. Number one is faith before a God event. Faith before a God event, meaning you believed God and what God said before the thing fell, before you got the challenge, before you had to make the decision. Faith before a God event allows God's people to experience deliverance. In the passage, Moses apparently is supposed to know that they're right on the banks of their deliverance. Not only will the Red Sea part, but the thing they thought was going to kill them will actually be the thing that saves them. You notice that in the passage? It's the Red Sea that was their trap that will become Egypt's trap and their deliverance. You see, this is the irony with which God works, because for them, and Israel, we know, has had trouble in having faith in God before the God event. But when you say, I'm going to trust God in the peaceful time, then when the God-size event where you are desperate and where things are broken and you need that healing comes along, when that comes along, then what you're expecting is something totally different. Not God to just rescue, but God to make all things right. I've got this handle on the back of my house. It's on the storm door. And I just got to say, it's a really bad design. It's a single bar with no grip on it, and it goes all the way through the door, and on one side it's got an Allen wrench key for the handle, and on the other side, it has an Allen wrench key for the other handle. And so you can literally take both handles off, and I guess the door would be locked forever. You'd never get in or out using that door. Just be stuck there. But what happens is over time from use, those handles wiggle off of the Allen wrench and off of that little bar in the middle, and they come off over time. And you have to solve this problem. So I'm constantly having to fix this. Now, when I fix it, it gets a little fixed. All right, so I do the same fix all the time. You got these problems in your life? They're always broken, by the way. They're just sometimes not broken. And so we go through and we fix little things in relationships, or we manage brokenness in relationships, is a better way to say it, without ever really finding deliverance. We manage compulsive sin. We manage our outbursts. We manage the worst of times, but we never really fix the problem. You see, for me, to fix my little door handle, I'm going to have to get a different door handle, because the design itself is the problem. Not the tools, not its occasional functionality, but the door handle itself is poorly designed. And I want to tell you, many of us, for doubt of God, are not experiencing full deliverance because ultimately we're just managing things that are broken anyway. Fear before a God event feels this way. When you enter the God event, you know that God is working on your behalf. And notice this. Even though Israel should know what to do, they don't know what to do. And even though they have expressed lack of faith before in God, God nonetheless works on their behalf. And even their enemies recognize that God is working on their behalf. Everybody in the context understands that God is on the side of Israel. When you enter a God event, the God event is just anything that requires God's deliverance. When you enter the God event and you have taken a faith in the person of God with you before the event began, then you begin to understand that God is working on your behalf, not against you. Second, you begin to understand that God has a bigger plan. God has a bigger plan. Our kids never get in the car and know where we're going when they're little. They're just going. They're just riders. They're just there. You could have explained it. They don't get it. They don't understand. They're just along for the ride. And listen, in some way, that's exactly how we are when we walk with Christ. We don't know how this is all going to work out. And there are solutions that we never would have guessed at. And we're expected to step forward into them without question or doubts. Faith before a God event allows you to understand that God is helping and doing today, that you're on the plan, that God is for you, and that God is aiding you in your course. Listen, some of you are like, I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure I'm there. Well, listen, here's what happens when faith follows a God event. When your faith follows a God event, like Pharaoh's faith is following the God events, that event forces people to experience judgment. What's their problem? What's Egypt's problem? It's a hard heart. Pharaoh has a hard heart. And all his servants had a hard heart. And so Pharaoh thinks that this is a good idea. As the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud held his forces away from Israel, nonetheless, as soon as they go away, he decides to charge headlong into this trap. Does it seem outlandish to you that someone would do something so foolish? In this case, they recognize it in the same way that all pagans recognize the works of the gods. They see the situation and they react in fear to God. God's not just helping Israel, God is fighting against the Egyptians. And they recognize it, and they accept that they should get away from Israel, but by this time, they're all too, they're too mired in the mud of the Red Sea. They're stuck in the trap. See, a soft heart is watching because you believe. You're watching what God is doing because you believe. And a hard heart is planning on doubt. How do you know whether you've got a soft heart toward God or a hard heart toward God? Well, when you have a soft heart, you're expecting to see God work out the details of life. And when you have a hard heart, you're expecting to be let down, and maybe God will do something. Listen, I want you to know the idea that maybe God will do something is a pagan idea built on the whole context of luck and good omens and all of that kind of stuff. I want to tell you today that paganism has always doubted first and only believed because of consequences. And God doesn't call you to a faith built on the consequences of life. God calls you to a faith that leads you to victory. So some of us, listen, we end up with a save your skin kind of faith, and it's fear-based. It's a bad mentality for us to be in. It's exactly the way that these Egyptians believed on the God of Israel. So notice verse 26, what happens. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. So here's Israel standing on the banks. The Egyptians are stuck in the mud and mire. All of his horsemen and all of his chariots and all of his foot soldiers. And they're stuck there with clogged wheels and absolute confusion. And some of us might say, well, how do you get in that kind of hard-heartedness so you can't see what's obvious? It's interesting, the history of this story, the interpretation of this story, has been a lesson in how doubt consumes and explains away the works of God. And so let's look at the evidence for just a second of what's going on, because doubters are looking to not believe. And so if you looked at this narrative, you would say, okay, a strong east wind, like must have been a really strong east wind, but a strong east wind comes and blows on the water, and it parts the water. You ever had a little pond? We used to do this as kids, and it's the ants crossing the Red Sea. You ever wanted ants to cross the Red Sea? Give them a little chance. So you take your little morsel, you make sure they know where it's at, and you get them all bunched up, and then you add some water. And what you do is you try to take a little leaf blower, and you blow a path for your ants. And as soon as you get some kind of walk in the path, you just let it go. The ants have to cross the Red Sea. Pharaoh's army gets drowned. And so you have this east wind. It's doing something one would expect, but it's not doing everything exactly the way wind would actually operate on the water. So doubters have often come to this text and been like, well, okay, what's actually meant is the wind dried out the land and caused the parting of the sea. But there are other evidences in this report. The report also tells us that there was a wall of water on the right and on their left. I want to tell you, blowing some water out of the way doesn't create that kind of situation. It also probably would have to be such a massive wind that Israel wouldn't have had to do anything other than lay down and get blown to the other side. But they walked across on dry land. You see, if you're looking for a way to doubt, then you find a way to reinterpret what you see as evidence of God's work so that it's not all on your shoulders to believe. And something like this seems to have happened to the Egyptians. And our pagan dudes, these soldiers who are now in between the two walls of water, at some point decide that this is divine and this is a divine hand. They have a savior skin kind of faith. They showed up because their situation was desperate. They showed up because they're now in this situation and they want to get out of this situation. Save your skin kind of faith. It's fear-based. Listen, you tell me if you trust Christ, I can get out of hell. Hey, all on board for that. And it's true. You get out of hell when you trust in Jesus Christ. To be scared into salvation because of a fear of hell, however, is not the same as a faith in Jesus for deliverance. And so what is created is, yeah, you say, I don't want to go to hell, so I'll trust in Jesus. But nothing about submission to the lordship of Jesus comes into that conversation. You're just saving your skin. And listen, there are many who have trusted in a Jesus in that way, whose leadoff pitch was, if you died tonight, would you be in heaven or hell? Listen, this is a fundamental fact of the gospel, and it needs to be understood. We need to declare that heaven and hell are real places, and they are the end results based on the faith of the individual, but it's not fire insurance faith that we talk about. We're talking about submission to the lordship of Jesus Christ that transforms a hard heart into a soft heart, that makes a disciple out of a rebel. We're talking about a kind of faith that's a submission to God faith, that's built on confidence in who God is and confidence in what God does. Have you ever seen a child standing at the edge of the pool that doesn't know how to swim? Dad is there in the pool. Dad is urging on the child, jump in, jump in. And you can see the happy fear on the child's face because the child has not jumped in before. Dad is standing just there, and if you're the sadistic kind of dads that I know you to be, you're getting further from your child every time they take a turn. And so they start, and they're unsure about even jumping. And they lean, and they think better, and they lean, and they think better, and then they go. Now you've broken the ice for them. They have built confidence in the fact that dad is there, and dad catches, and they're not going to die. It doesn't reduce the risk that they feel, but it increases the confidence in what they're doing. And when you have a confidence-based faith, then you understand your decisions in the Lord may or may not always be the right decisions. Sometimes we can misinterpret what God is doing, but what your confidence is that God will deliver. When you have a fear-based faith, listen, it's just rolling the dice on whether God comes through or not. Only this submission to God kind of faith, that confidence-based faith, can lead us to a place where we are willing to take on the hard things in order to hear from God and follow Him. And so there's a decision point we come to. We have to decide to let our heart change. So decisions follow a general course of things, all right? General course of thoughts. Number one, in order to decide to let your heart change, you're going to have to identify that, in fact, there is a decision. You can't make a decision in the face of inevitability. Like, you're going to eat lunch today. That's inevitable. You're not making a decision. You're only making a decision, well, I assume you're eating lunch today. Some of you seem less enticed about that. Are you eating lunch today or not? I assume it's only a decision of what you eat for lunch today, not if you eat. So you have to identify that there's a decision. You have to then identify that what the choices are. You have to know these choices. And so Israel has two choices. They can even either fight it out with Egypt or do the impossible. Go through the sea. God has said, your way is through the sea. Okay. So now they have to make a decision. Three, when you're making decisions, you have to weigh the alternatives. What's better or worse about these situations that I'm in? About the decisions I have to make. And four, You have to choose your alternative. So you actually have to decide of the alternatives you have, you have to decide which one you're going to take. And then you have to take it, the action. You can stand a long time deciding which golf club to use. In my case, it doesn't really matter which golf club I choose. It's not a problem with golf clubs for me. It's a problem with swinging, hitting, generally direction, and skill as a whole. I could get as close with a putter as I could with a driver. It really wouldn't matter. But you have to take action, and you have to take the swing. You have to decide. And you have to decide to let your heart change. It doesn't happen. You decide for it to happen. Now listen, here's what we're expecting. We're expecting that God is faithful. We preach today with confidence-based faith. That if you decide to let God change your heart and let you have a soft heart, that God, in fact, will move in that way. You see, we're not saying, listen, get into a rut and then decide out of fear for being totally swallowed up to follow Christ. That's not what we're saying. We're saying, listen, today, in relative peace, decide to walk with Christ, and then your confidence in what God does, just like the kid on the edge of the pool, will begin to increase. But you have to decide to jump. See, when you decide to let your heart change, here's what begins to happen. First, you begin to see the evidence differently. You don't look at God's interaction as casual, circumstantial potentials. You look at the things of life in a clear-headed, God is working on this kind of way. Let me tell you one of the most subtle but vibrant ways we understand God to work. God works in the heart, and when you pray, Lord, cure my anger, take it away from me, help me to be a new man, a new woman, whatever the issue is, and you begin to see that subtle change over time, I want to tell you, it's not because you prayed, it's because God heard, and God has begun an internal work to change your character and to change your quality. See, some of us, we're looking for a therapist to make us better, but not asking God, who can touch the heart, to transform us. That may be a great place for a great counselor. We do biblical counseling around here, and we invite you to talk to us. But I tell you, what we can do is guide and point you to Christ, because only Christ does the heart changing. So you have to decide, am I going to let modern psychology change my heart? I tell you, that's no change. That's just a harder heart toward God. Or am I going to allow Christ to change my heart? So you begin to see different evidences of how God is working. And when they marched into the sea after Moses had just waved his hand, I think this is just a really interesting thing, because in The Prince of Egypt, the animated movie from long ago, like, this is a big dramatic moment where Moses takes his staff and he plants it in the sand, and then whoosh, you know, you have the ocean is parted in that movie. There's a well that swims through on one side. It's really dramatic. The planting of the staff is dramatic, like he's claimed the moon. But we don't get any of that drama. God says, why are you standing there? Why are you debating this, obviously? Just wave your staff over the sea. It's going to part in front of you. What did you think was going to happen? That's almost the texture of God's comment to Moses. It's almost like he's put out that Moses didn't think about this. And then you can almost feel the wind kind of blow in your face, a little bit of gust and some sand, and then it persists, and then the ocean begins to part in a way that's unnatural. You begin to see different evidence. Second, when you decide to let your heart change, you begin to anticipate different results. You begin to anticipate different results. They thought, Israel thought they were going to die there. They thought the Egyptians were going to overtake them and kill them. They were in a mortal peril. It doesn't seem to have any way of understanding that the result God is bringing through the Red Sea is not just their deliverance, but a full deliverance, meaning that threat that existed will never threaten them again. Some of you need to fix some stuff. And by fix it, what I mean is you need to allow God to unseat it, to yank it out of your soul, and to install new guts. You need a full transformation. When you decide to let your heart be changed, you begin to solve different problems. Not just working on the same old management of old problems, but you begin to solve different problems. You begin to ask the question, how can we raise our kids in the Lord so that they honor Christ, so that they have a better head start than we did? How can we help our kids become adult followers of Christ? How can we cause our marriage to be a source of mission? How can I better serve what Christ is doing? You see, those are different problems than just figuring out how to get enough money, how to survive today, and how to be friendly enough and have others be friendly enough to you. When you begin to solve different problems, you begin to solve things that matter to God and not just to you. And you begin to hope for different outcomes. You begin to hope for different outcomes. And I want to tell you, believer in the Lord, your hope is a different outcome than the rest of humanity. I've done a whole lot of funerals, and I want to tell you, if I live long enough, and if you don't live as long, I'll probably do your funeral too. The hope of this world is simply this, that whatever you get is limited and you die. That's the hope of this world. And when you have this confidence in Christ, then you are living beyond that hope, that death, that certainty, and you begin to anticipate an eternal, everlasting life. That changes the risks that you take. That changes the direction you follow. That changes the heart that you have. You begin to say in your heart, how can I satisfy God rather than myself? Because I look for an eternal place with Christ. You hope for different outcomes. So, let's wrap this up. Decisions require actions. I've given you the choices, fear-based or confidence-based. How you want to believe in Christ. And this is the invitation to faith. What God did here in part in delivering Israel, meaning getting them out of their immediate issue, Christ has done for all eternity by taking your sin and the wrath of God due to you on himself, dying on that cross for that sin and being resurrected to bring you life. That is a salvation that is open for your claim. And if you will decide to let God change your heart, then this morning can be the beginning of a victorious life rather than management of brokenness. Now, I want to tell you, when you trust Christ, it doesn't mean that the problems go away. Remember, they got free of Egypt, but now they're facing the wilderness and they're going to walk with God. Or probably do a poor job at it is what ends up happening. But God has brought them through and brought them to a place of leadership. And I want to tell you that we invite you this morning to a place of faith, not because of potential judgment, but because of the opportunity of deliverance. And today is that invitation. So if you're here, that's the decision to take action and to trust Christ. Will you stand with me? The team is coming back.